This episode is brought to you by Odd Mo's Pizza in Canby. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, cider, and wine delivered. Call them today at 503-266-8444.
This episode is also brought to you by the Canby Liquor Store. Father's Day is coming, and they really have everything that your dad really wants. From hand-selected gifts you won't find anywhere else, to small batch bourbons and unique craft beers. Find them in the Fred Meyer Shopping Center. Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me? A punishing lightning storm and threats of flash flooding were not what many Clackamas County residents wanted, coming on the heels of 10 days of devastating wildfires that have burned across hundreds of thousands of acres, but as they say, when it rains, it pours. The much-anticipated rain did finally arrive Thursday night. Unfortunately, it brought with it lightning and powerful winds that downed fire-weakened trees and blocked roads throughout the region. The charred and hollowed out areas around Malala, Colton, Estacada, and other communities impacted by the Riverside Fire were in no position to absorb the deluge that was predicted, and officials warned residents, some of whom had only just returned to their homes, to be wary of potential mudslides. Though the rains are sure to help, fire managers do not anticipate that they would be the end of the Riverside Fire. It will likely continue to burn in deep layers of needles on the forest floor, stumps, logs, and standing dead trees, officials said. Hand crews and dozers continue to make progress this weekend, constructing and connecting fire lines on the west and north sides of Riverside. Once fire lines were in place, firefighters were continuing to mop up and eliminate hot spots 20 to 30 feet within the fire's perimeter. On the east and south sides, firefighters were looking for opportunities to use existing roads outside the wilderness area as the safest, most effective opportunities to limit the fire's spread in the remote, rugged terrain. At this stage, firefighters' priorities continue to be the safety of the public and first responders, local communities in Clackamas County, ancestral tribal lands, infrastructure, including power lines, recreation sites and facilities, hydro and natural gas resources, and communication sites. They also hope to protect federal, state, and private forest resources, archaeological, historical, and cultural resources, designated wilderness areas and wild and scenic rivers, river ecosystems and riparian areas, wildlife and fishery resources, and habitats. Fortunately, the rains have brought some relief to the extremely unhealthy and even hazardous air quality that has plagued the region since last week. Check tripcheck.com for the latest in road closures.
Air quality in the Willamette Valley has improved dramatically over a week of heavy smoke, providing welcome relief to thousands enduring other fallout from the wildfires that have ravaged the area. And this trend is expected to continue throughout Saturday and into Sunday. Coastal areas in the entire Willamette Valley are seeing much needed relief from the dense smoke impacts, with particulate levels rated in the good to moderate range throughout Saturday. Clear skies will be visible from Eugene to Salem and Portland. Pockets of moderate air quality zones may linger as smoke continues to lift. Fire activity on the Riverside, Beachy Creek, Lions Head, and Holiday Farm fires has slowed significantly. Officials said Saturday morning, with small pockets of heat along the fire line where crews are working. Friday's cooler temperatures and participation helped firefighters' efforts, though incident commanders predicted the much-anticipated rains would not be a fire-ending event. Despite much of the fire area receiving a quarter inch of rain or more, the fires remains active in deep layers of needles on the forest floor, stumps, logs, and standing dead trees. Rain doesn't do much to put out the fires unless we get a lot of it, said Incident Commander Alan Sinclair. But the good news is cool, damp weather is moderating fire activity and giving us a chance to make progress in contaminant efforts. Hand crews and dozers continue to construct and connect fire lines on the west and north sides of fire. On the east and south sides of the fires, firefighters are using existing roads outside the wilderness area as the safest, most effective opportunities to limit the fire spread in the remote, rugged terrain. The Riverside fire remains the number one priority in the Northwest geographic area, and additional resources continue to arrive. Firefighters are working with nearby incident management teams to share resources where they are needed most. The human-caused Riverside fire in Clackamas County has covered 137,865 acres and is now 11% contained.
The Oregon Department of Transportation has released more details on its planned $9 million repaving and improvement project on Highway 99E through Canby, which is currently in the design phase and planned for construction in 2022, though the schedule is subject to change. This project will repave and reconstruct sections of 99E between South Pine Street and Southwest Berg Parkway, essentially from Canby Builder Supply to the Wild Hair Saloon, and make safety and ADA improvements. According to ODOT, the highway will be repaved the entire length of the project for a, quote, safer, smoother ride. Officials also plan to improve the traffic signals and crosswalks at Elm, Grant, and Ivy, as well as other crossing locations that don't meet safety guidelines. The Southwest 4th Avenue intersection near the Clackamas County Fairgrounds will be redesigned and reconstructed for safer access, and the sidewalk will be rebuilt on the south side of 99E between La Kona Supermarket and Rite Aid. Striping will be updated along the highway for narrower and more consistent lanes to encourage slower, safer speeds, which may allow for bicycle lanes on both sides of 99E between Berg Parkway and South Elm. Sidewalk curb ramps will be installed at all intersections to meet Americans with Disability Act standards. Unused railroad tracks across 99E will be removed, and those still in use will be realigned to eliminate a hazard that currently exists for two-wheel vehicles. ODOT also says it will partner with Canby Area Transit on improvements to increase safety and access for transit users as bus shelters are added in the area. More details on the project are available on ODOT's website, including an interactive map and a survey. For links, find this story on our website, canbyfirst.com.
Leaders of several educators' unions at Clackamas Community College are denouncing an unsanctioned vehicle rally staged at the college's Oregon City campus earlier this month in support of President Donald Trump, which they say featured armed militants and white nationalists. Susan Mach, a English instructor at CCC, read a letter to President Tim Cook and the college's Board of Education during a virtual meeting Wednesday night, which was in response to the pro-Trump rally on Labor Day that participants said drew 1,500 attendees. The rally included armed protesters associated with Patriot Prayer and Proud Boys, white nationalists that have been categorized as extremist groups, the letter said, which was signed by leaders and members of the associations representing the college's faculty and classified employees. The letter also referenced a previous communication from Cook to the college community in which he described the gathering as an unsanctioned flash rally that was not reflective of who we are and what we care about. Even if the college was ultimately powerless to prevent these hate groups from invading our campus, it should always be clear that we do not willingly acquiesce to their presence. Complicity with violence and hate is intolerable, Mach said. While we can't erase the past, we must work diligently to prevent events like this from happening again. The educators who signed the letter offered their assistance to President Cook and the board in denouncing our association with the rally and the hateful values on display there, and asked for a meeting with officials to ask how the event was allowed to happen and discuss policies that would prevent such gatherings from occurring in the future. Participants who were at the rally told Now Hear This Camby that it was in support of President Trump's re-election bid, as well as a Back the Blue pro-police demonstration. Participating trucks and other vehicles bore American flags, some in the thin blue line style, and Trump-Pence banners. They said they were unaware of the presence of any right-wing groups such as the Proud Boys or Patriot Prayer, and that they saw no firearms being openly carried. To see a complete copy of the letter, visit canbyfirst.com.
It may go down as the weirdest first day of school in Canby history. Delayed half a dozen times, first because of COVID-19, then because of a series of historic wildfires that broke out across the region the night before the first day of school. Though it was the sprawling infernos in rural Clackamas County that would come to dominate the news cycle, it was a smaller blaze in urban Oregon City that most impacted Canby schools on that first day. A fire damaged a fiber optic cable that delivers internet to the Canby School District, a fairly critical disruption for a new model built around delivering the bulk of its instruction online. After that, the first day of school was repeatedly pushed back because of escalating evacuation zones and hazardous air quality from the fallout of the largest wildfires the county has ever seen. Finally, school began on Thursday, September 17th. No student left their home. Some still evacuated weren't even at their homes. They connected with their teachers and with each other virtually through Google Classroom on district-issued mobile devices. It was, as we said, pretty strange, but the resiliency of kids was on full display. We've averaged 90% attendance for the first 2 days, said Canby High School teacher Bob Hammett, a figure that was later confirmed by Principal Greg Dinza. We have many students that are currently in another state but are still finding a way to attend. Hammett told of a student who was, quote, a little late on day two because her family's evacuation shelter doesn't have Wi-Fi. She had to drive 30 minutes to a cousin's house to get the internet. Yesterday, a group of students logged on from an RV park in Washington that they had evacuated to, Hammett said. Today, they logged in again under umbrellas because it was raining. Now Hear This Canby asked other teachers, parents, and students what they thought of school so far. To hear what they had to say, find this story on our website, canbyfirst.com.
Hey, Frankie, do you ever wonder why some businesses aren't, like, more transparent?
Oh, yeah. Like, some of the old buildings downtown are so dark. Get some more windows, you know?
No. I mean, like, transparent as in being open and honest about their business practices.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, DirectLink is a good example. They don't have internet data caps or charge extra fees for high usage.
Oh, yeah. Which is great with all the internet I've been using since this whole COVID situation started.
They also don't charge infrastructure build fees like some other providers. And they're active in our community, too. Check out their philanthropic efforts at directlink.coop/community.
Did you know that they also hold an annual meeting every year where members can talk directly with the board of directors and upper management?
Talk about transparent. You won't see any other companies being that accessible. DirectLink really is here for us. Call 503-266-8111 or visit directlink.coop to learn more today.
On the Canby Conversation today, I've got my co-host again, Tyler Clausen.
I made it for two in a row,
I know.
Man.
Well, not in a row, because we do two of these a week, remember?
It's two in a row for me, though. I'm here twice in a row in my life.
2 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
And our real guest is Luke Adams.
What's up, guys?
Hey, man. He is a YouTube creator on the channel Magnificent Gravity.
Yeah.
Been doing some really cool work throughout the wildfire crisis facing Clackamas County. But why don't you start, Luke, just tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe how you got into filmmaking.
Yeah, sure. So it started in high school, of course. I went to Malala High School. And
grew up here in Malala?
I grew up here in Canby and Malala, right in the middle. I live right on the border between the two.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's been an interesting life out here in the farmlands.
Yeah.
And so
did you grow up on a farm?
Yeah, yeah.
What else is between Canby and Malala?
Right. Literally nothing else.
It's all farms.
Yeah.
So yeah, I got hooked in high school,
rivers.
Man.
Yeah. River farms.
Got hooked in high school, just been making videos ever since. And I decided a few years ago to start a YouTube channel. And it's been slow.
Yeah.
For sure. I only have 100.
Until about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I got a few views. I only have 130 subscribers, and which is really not that many.
Yeah.
Especially being around for a couple of years.
Sure.
But I saw an opportunity to. It started with the crazy smoky day out here. I was like, wow, this lighting is beautiful. Mm. And. We actually found out that there was a fire at the mill just a few miles from our house.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the only fire I knew about at the time. And then I realized there was way more smoke in the sky than just what a mill. The mill is huge, but there was way more smoke than could have been made. And we were told to evacuate or begin evacuating our house.
Was this on that first day or the day after, I guess it would have been? That Tuesday after it all started? It started on a Monday.
Right. So, yeah, it was the next day.
Yeah.
And
you have a drone. You were out there flying that thing around.
Right.
Yeah.
So I busted out the drone and sent it up, and the visuals are just beautiful, mm-hmm. even though I began to realize the tragic nature of what was actually going on.
Sure.
And then the wind picked up, and things just got a million times worse, as I'm sure you guys know by now, obviously. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's one thing that's really interesting about, especially those first few days, we were getting just flooded with pictures because, like, the sky was so alien and weird and just, like, everyone, like, you couldn't, like, walk outside without wanting to take a picture.
Like, actually, it's funny because where my apartment is, like, I'm looking out one window and it faces completely the opposite from where all the smoke was.
Yeah.
So literally all day I was just kind of, I was hanging out at home and I was looking out the window and I'm just like, man, it's a really nice day out. And at one point my wife texts me and she's like, it's disastrous out there. I can't believe how crazy it is. And I'm like looking out the window and it literally was a perfectly blue sky.
Yeah.
Right.
And I didn't see a hint of smoke. And I'm like, what are you talking about? What's going on? And then I walked outside and just
looked the other way.
Literally turned the corner and went, oh, and this is like later in the evening. So it was a huge change of, and so for the rest of the day, it was just watching the smoke kind of encroach on the blue sky that we had from my window. So yeah, it was pretty surreal to walk around the corner and see such a crazy change in atmosphere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it wasn't subtle. Like there's even pictures where you could see like where that those two things met, you know. You have like a clear delineation between blue sky and this weird, you know, Venus sky. What I was gonna say, like, so, you know, very alien and obviously like dangerous, you know, horrible things going on, but I mean, if you didn't know, some of the pictures are really kind of pretty.
Like, in an alternate situation.
Not really the next day when it just looked like we were all in the pits of Mordor and hell or something, like this like hellish landscape. But before that, the orange day was, some of them were kind of pretty.
I really think the red day, I think we got the reddest day out of anybody in the area. I saw a bunch of videos online and it was so much more red here than anywhere else.
Yeah.
It was unreal.
Very weird.
So what was it that, I mean, did you walk outside and go, okay, I'm going to get my drone up in the air? Or were you just taking photos and videos with just a standard camera before?
It was all by drone
The
first few days.
Okay.
And I sent it up because I was like, oh, I wonder if we can see the lumber mill fire from our house. And we could. But then I realized the sky had way more smoke in it.
Yeah.
And then a couple minutes later, we found out there was that massive forest fire. So, yeah, it started with the drone.
Is there any danger to your drone with all the smoke in the air?
Oh, not at all. No.
It can cut through that pretty easily.
Maybe if it was right next to the fire.
Sure.
The blades might melt.
Yeah. If it's getting the thermal heat coming up and melting that. I just meant like with all that smoke, with it being like thicker and harder to get through, if it
rubs on it at all. It wouldn't be any problem for the motors at all.
Yeah. And so what was it that got you out into kind of out into the forest and out where people were actually working on the fires themselves?
Yeah, that was kind of like the next phase for you of your films.
Right.
Yeah.
So I realized, you know, I wanted to help. And so I went out there. And I found out.
Went out where?
Right. Up into the hills. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And so I asked around, and at first I didn't know anybody who was up there, because I'm really not a huge member of Malala. Mm-hmm. I mean, I grew up there. I went to high school there, but I only have two or three friends that still live there.
Not a part of the Maluminati.
Right. Yes. Right.
Is that a real thing? Okay.
I mean, it is now. Yeah. Sounds cool.
And so, I ended up getting a tip as to one of the roads up there, and we also started looking at which roads were heading straight into the hot spots.
Yeah.
And so I went straight up the first one, you know, the Malala River corridor, and by the time I got there, it was gated off. You weren't allowed to go up there. Mm-hmm. And so I kept driving around, and then I found Sawtell mm-hmm. Road.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably the biggest one to be accepting volunteers to fight the fire. And actually, the first day I got to the Sawtell barricade, they didn't let me in because what they kept saying is I stick out like a sore thumb. You know, I'm from Malala, but none of them recognized me. Mm. And I didn't have a truck. I just showed up in my car with a shovel.
Yeah.
And so they were just kind of laughing at me.
Yeah.
And so they're like, do you even know anybody here? And I was like, of course. I have this friend. He goes by Bogart. I grew up right next to him in this house right next to mine. And his name's Devin. He went by Devin Moret at the time, but I think his last name's Patty now. And so I went up the next day with him in his big white truck, and they're like, come on in, you know? like, yeah, welcome to the Redneck Brigade, you know?
Jeez.
It's like, and so that was very recertifying for me. It felt good to finally get in there and start fighting. I was heartbroken the day they didn't let me in the first time because I really wanted to help out.
Yeah.
I was like, come on, guys. I have friends up there fighting right now. Like, I need to get up there.
Yeah.
And so I finally got up there and started filming, and the rest is history. Got some nice views, but I was just trying to get more volunteers up there at the time. When I got up there, there really wasn't as many people as I thought would be up there. Everybody evacuated, which I was shocked by. When I found out the fire was coming towards my house, I was immediately walking around my property like, okay, we're going to cut down this tree. We're going to cut down this tree. Mm-hmm. We're going to mow this. We're going to dig a huge fire line right here with the tractor. And we were like not evacuating. We were like, okay, we're going to fill up a bunch of 5-gallon buckets and throw water on the house if we have to.
Yeah.
And so
sort of digging in and kind of building that defensible space that everyone's talking about now.
So that's what I did for the first couple of days. And I helped my parents pack and get everything ready to go.
Luke's out there with his drone with like tiny like Dixie cups of water, like
just dropping little bits of water on it.
Yeah. You know what? That's a brilliant
idea.
You'd
be surprised how powerful those drones are, man.
I actually tried flying my drone at one of the fire sites, and DJI, the company that made the drone that I was trying to fly, they had marked it as a no-fly zone, so my drone wouldn't even take off. Because I would have had some more aerial shots of those fires up close, but they had been marked as a no-fly zone, and I didn't want to just start flying.
Yeah, they were the fire. Once the incident management took over, which I, you know, still don't fully understand what it means, but they were putting out a lot of advisories about drones and saying like, if they see a drone, like if they're out there on their helicopters or whatnot, and they see a drone, like they have to land. I don't know why, but they're like, if you fly, we can't, is what they were saying.
So there weren't any helicopters within miles of the area. They were all somewhere else fighting some other fire.
Are they just worried that like the drone will get into their helicopter and damage it or something?
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's a huge risk to life.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I am really fascinated as much as you can tell that I don't really understand technology or know anything about that. I'm much more interested in kind of the human element and some of those stories. Can you tell me a little bit more? There's, I mean, it's already right. almost like the stuff of legend. These like Malolo, whether you call them like the Hillbilly Brigade or the Malolo Rednecks or the, there's a road out there. I just heard this one a few days ago, but it's Lebo Road. Mm-hmm. And so the Lebo Legends is a thing. They're like mm-hmm. making t-shirts and everything, but it's almost, yeah, like the stuff of legends. These just like non-firefighters, not even like volunteer firefighters, just, you know, contractors and loggers and farmers yeah. and people just banding together mm-hmm. to protect their communities and really fulfilling, because especially that first week, like there just weren't enough fire, as much as hard as the firefighters were working, like no disrespect at all to them, they were doing amazing, but there just weren't enough of them for sure. for the largest fire that the county's ever seen. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah, the entire state has ever seen.
Yeah.
On top of the fact that we already had people outside of our county fighting fires for other places.
Right.
So we were already spread thin.
Right.
Yeah, they were top of this
already
being,
assisting on other
so there's so many factors to take into effect of, like, of, you know, this became a necessity. It became important for people to take that stand on their own and fight for their own homes. So I can applaud them. I think it's really good that people are willing to not just run. Mm-hmm. But I think not to get super patriotic or anything, but like that's kind of the American spirit, right? Is like, yeah. no, we're going to stand and we're gonna take that.
Well, also just like, you know, I live out in the country now, but it's still like not natural to me, and I definitely mm-hmm. grew up a city boy, like, but to me, like, you know, fires are fought by firefighters, like you have to have like all sure. this specialized training and equipment. Like it didn't even occur to me that a non-firefighter could do anything useful
right.
to
right.
combat a fire without a fire truck and
right.
you know
right.
like a hose. So yeah, but I mean, they've got farming equipment that has big tanks and can spray yeah. water. They've got you know, a huge thing that I've learned a lot about recently is kind of what you were talking about, building those fire breaks and mm-hmm. cutting down trees and kind of guiding a fire, like not stopping it, but just more guiding it where you would rather it go.
Right.
So yeah, just tell us more about those guys out there and gals probably.
Yeah, so like I said, I don't necessarily identify as a redneck, a hillbilly, or any other type of those stereotypes.
Let the record show, Luke does have a beard.
Yes, and, I do have a nice...
I have a beard, but I'm not a redneck.
And a baseball cap.
I do have a nice scruffy beard. I think yeah. that's one thing that got me past the line for sure.
Right. Once you were in a pickup truck.
Right, yeah. exactly. What's up, y'all?
Oh, he's good. Let him in. Yeah. He said the secret word.
Right, right.
Oh, he knows the code word.
The password.
Right, right. Yeah, no.
Hey, y'all.
It was a bunch of really rough, dirty dudes after a couple hours, you know, after being up there for a while, you're just covered in dirt and soot and coughing up smoke and and just breathing hard and covered in sweat and more dirt. And it was really, one of the days up there was really quite frightening. The wind was picking up and it was an extremely dry day and it just felt like guerrilla warfare, man. There were fires popping up everywhere. We'd put out 5-15 fires.
You were really deep beyond the fire line, right?
Like, oh yeah.
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 Like 10 miles.
That was my most recent video. That was not at the fire line.
Yeah.
That was pretty far in because we were going exploring to try and see if there was any green past the fire line.
Okay.
But
go back to that first day. We'll hear about that later then.
Yeah, the main fire line, there were lots of people and we'd be putting out these dry fires with the shovels. We had barely any water. The water was always saved for the biggest of the fires.
Right, right.
But we'd be putting out these little fires by hand with the shovels, and a minute later, they'd be popping back up, and there'd be even more of them, and they would be even bigger because of the wind and because of how dry it was. And we actually had to leave the area because the wind started picking up, and there was this huge wall of fire headed our way. And I was like, heck with this, let's just get out of here. I wanted to stay and film it, but I was like, nah, we should probably just leave. And we ended up actually seeing it as we were driving out. It was like this 10-foot tall wall of fire just burning through this really thick brush about 5 feet off the side of the road, and it was going to cut us off, essentially.
Yeah.
And so we got out of there, and after that, it was just kind of like a big get-together of everybody just waiting and drinking beers and telling old stories about visiting the White Horse, the most popular bar in Malala. Yeah, so I heard some crazy stories there that I am definitely not allowed to repeat. And yeah, it was crazy out there, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there were times you in fear of your life.
Yeah, that there was that one time for sure. My heart rate definitely leaped up a few extra beats when they were like, okay, big fire headed this way. We got to go. And there's about 15, 20 trucks in a line just trying to get out of there.
Right. And you're like, dude, I brought a shovel. I didn't sign up for a wall of fire.
I have a bottle of Gatorade.
Yeah.
I can put out exactly half a fire if I'm lucky.
Oh, man. But, okay. Well, I am also really interested then in kind of the landscape because I've seen some photos and heard some like firefighter descriptions, but this like almost alien world to like half the existing half the county now where you've got like, you know, these burnt out trees and just trees like exploding and burning from inside.
Exploding trees.
Yeah. And just like embers raining down and stuff. Did you see some of that?
I did not see any exploding trees per se. They go up like firecrackers for sure.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of little tiny pops and cracks and they go up within 30 seconds, like a good 6 foot tree will grow up in 30 seconds because it gets so hot.
Yeah.
But no exploding trees. But yeah, the burnt areas just go on forever, man. Mm. It's quite astounding. It's like something you'd see in a movie for sure. Like Terminator minus the skulls and machines.
Right. But like sort of like a war zone almost.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Have you been able to get any footage of the aftermath at all?
My last video had quite a bit of it.
Yeah.
I was considering doing one more video of just going up there and seeing what, you know, some of my favorite spots growing up and most of my adult life has been spent out here going up the Malala River corridor. It's all gone now from what I've heard. And it's absolutely heartbreaking. So many wonderful memories up there, jumping off rocks, hanging out with friends, the people I love, and who knows what is even still there, you know, if we can go on a walk without just crying.
Yeah.
Because it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think you did find like some animals and stuff, like some like symbols of like, let's pick up a little bit of a more hopeful tone as we wrap this up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There were quite a few green, and I want to call them spots because they weren't widespread green areas. You'd see a couple on the side of the road. They'd go up to the top of the hill. And then hopefully they go beyond that hill, but, you know, drive for another 30 seconds and you're back black to gray, back to gray and black.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everything gray and black. And so we saw some deer, saw a whole bunch of birds, and the river's still there. Don't worry. And, but that's all I saw. I didn't see anything like frogs or salamanders or flies, butterflies.
Yeah. I guess I wasn't worried about the river burning. That didn't occur to me.
I don't know. It got really point, dry.
It was a big concern of mine.
Okay.
Yeah. I was worried.
Yeah. And what about the community? I mean, we've covered some of the
stories. Dude, the community. Like, oh my gosh, everybody.
Of the way it pulled together. And I mean, like some awesome stories from Canby as well, but Malala was like literally surrounded by fire for like a week. And a lot of people having to evacuate and they were really in the thick of it.
It was unreal. You know, I joined Malala Now just so that I could communicate. It's their Facebook page. Mm-hmm. Just so I could communicate with everyone and coordinate rides up to the fires and see what's going on. And some of the people that I went to high school with are helping out. And even though I haven't spoken to them since, you know, 11th grade, it's really cool to see people still in the area and just ready to go when something like this happens.
Yeah.
Everybody, we just kind of instantly realized, oh my god, there's no firefighters. So everybody was ready to go. It was so cool. It was like I didn't know Malala was an army. You know, like, here we go, let's beat up this fire. And it felt really good to be a part of that, and it felt good to get people aware that, you know, Malala isn't in flames and that you don't need to leave necessarily. What you need to do is come up and help fight the fire because you're capable of doing this. And like me, I'm not the biggest dude in the world. I'm not covered in muscles, but I was able to go up there and put out hundreds of fires within just a few days. Yes, some of them came back, and yes, I felt totally useless on that day the wind came back because we were just completely moved out by a huge fire coming in, putting away all the work we just did. So but it was a really awesome experience.
Yeah. And I mean, when you look at the map of the fire and of the county, like, there's no natural, like, what's really amazing to me, there's no, like, natural, there's no mountains, there's no river, there's no like, natural reason that the fire stopped where it did. It's just people. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, like, definitely, yeah, some firefighters, definitely some civilians, just spread out all along this, like, more than 100-mile long perimeter. Mm-hmm. And just, like, you know, making a stand. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, the main thing that burned was the underbrush.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of really tall trees, and the fire spread mainly because of the wind. The wind sent the fire up into the tops of the trees, which made the fire way hotter. Mm-hmm. And made the fire go much farther. Once the wind died down, the fire obviously slowed down, and it was spreading mostly through the underbrush, yeah, which slowed it down, gave us a little more time.
I read Beachy Creek, because Beachy Creek, the one in Marion County, had been going for like a few weeks,
sure,
like just kind of smoldering. It went from 500 acres to 130,000 that first night.
In
like
a day.
It just,
yeah,
no one predicted that. Like, the officials were watching it, they're like, maybe we should put it out with this big event, but it, like, it might spread, but no one thought it would go that,
yeah,
in,
yeah,
one night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's about all the questions I have.
I'm good. It's been an interesting watch to watch you upload these videos and just kind of see, because, you know, we have our experience from a lot of different people, but there's a lot of photos, but there's not a lot of videos, especially of people who are actually up there working on it. So, listeners, if you really do want to get a sense of what it was like for these people up there, I highly recommend checking out his YouTube channel, which again is Magnificent Gravity, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Let's get him a few more subscribers, people.
and check it out. And I'm interested to see if you do go back up, just seeing more and more footage of what that area is going to look like.
I should be able to fly.
Yeah.
Now.
That's what I'm hoping.
Hopefully
for
the barrier is gone.
If they're not doing as much work, and if things are actually clearing up, then hopefully you can get out there and get some good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see, especially with the rains coming now. I think it's cleared up the skies quite a bit. Well, I mean, obviously it has, and helped tamp down the fire a bit as well.
For sure.
Well, thanks, Luke. Thanks for doing your work there, and both in terms of the content creating and the video, and also fighting fires with the shovel.
Yeah, it's really cool that you're able to do both and keep a handle on that.
So. Yeah, I want to thank the Malala community for allowing me to work and film at the same time.
Sure.
And thank you all of you for fighting the fires. It was really amazing how you all pulled together.
Yeah.
Great work, guys.
Thanks for giving him a chance after that first day.
Yeah.
And thank you, Tylers, for having me in today.
Yeah,
thank you. It's been an honor, a pleasure.
Yeah, for sure.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. Mm-hmm. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate, and we got in a carriage ride with the horse, and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months. Sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life. Mm-hmm.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Deputies with the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office are continuing their enhanced patrols of the areas that have been evacuated due to the ongoing wildfires and have made several more arrests. Two men were arrested Sunday, September 13th, in what was then a Level 3 evacuation zone just north of Milo McLever State Park. Drugs, weapons, burglary tools, and fireworks were found in their possession, police said. Ryan Burnett, 31, of Vancouver, Washington, and Justin Valentin, 32, of Portland, face various charges for their roles in the incident, which included a high-speed chase through fire-ravaged North Clackamas County. Deputies were dispatched to the area of South Springwater Road and Feldheimer, northwest of Estacada. Sunday, on a report of a suspicious vehicle, which was reported to have gas cans on its exterior, according to the caller. A deputy initiated a traffic stop for a faulty brake light, and the driver slowly came to a stop. However, as the deputy approached on foot, the driver rapidly drove away in an attempt to flee, police said. Other patrol units in the area responded to assist with the pursuit. An Oregon State Police trooper was able to deploy spike strips, a device used to safely deflate the suspect vehicle's tires in an attempt to bring the pursuit to a stop. As the vehicle continued fleeing, a deputy attempted a pursuit intervention technique, also known as pit maneuver, in an intentional spinning of the vehicle to cause it to stop, which was unsuccessful. However, it apparently encouraged the driver to abandon his flight as he stopped his vehicle and surrendered. The driver stated he fled because he was scared and believed he had a warrant for his arrest, a release from the sheriff's office said. He said that he was in the area to help his dad move, but was unable to provide his dad's address. A search of the vehicle revealed heroin, methamphetamine, drug paraphernalia, a dagger, an air-powered pistol replica, an assortment of shaved vehicle keys, and a single firework, as well as various hand and power tools, according to police. The two men arrested were transported to an area hospital for treatment of pre-existing medical conditions. Both were charged with possession of heroin, possession of methamphetamine, felon in possession of a restricted weapon, and possession of burglary tools. Burnett, the driver, was also charged with an attempt to elude police officers. On the afternoon of September 15th, deputies responded to a report of a suspicious vehicle, a white Ford Taurus pulling into multiple driveways in the area of Spangler Road near Beaver Creek. Deputies located the suspect off Highway 213 in Wagon Wheel Park. The vehicle's tags were expired and its passenger's tail light was out, police said. In the vehicle were Paul Theodore Nichols, 32, and Taylina Renee Johnson, 32, both of whom are well known to local authorities, according to sheriff's office. In the back seat was a steel leaf blower, which turned out to be stolen, and a number of bags. Clackamas County K-9 Officer Grimm was present at the call and is trained and certified to detect cocaine, heroin, and methamphetamine. Grimm alerted on the vehicle, and deputies reportedly located methamphetamine in Johnson's purse. Nichols was allegedly in possession of a stolen Pacific Pride gas card and heroin. Police believe the stolen leaf blower may have been a part of a spat of yard tool thefts that occurred in the area during the county's state of emergency. The pair were transported to the Clackamas County Jail without incident, and the vehicle was towed. In another incident, a property owner off Markham Circle, south of Mullala, called to report a suspicious car parked on his property when he showed up to check on his place. The suspicious vehicle, a blue Ford Focus sedan, ended up being a stolen car out of Mullala. Sometime between September 10th and September 12th, the Ford had been stolen from Mullala residents while the owner was evacuated. The owner had returned to a residence to find her vehicle was missing. The vehicle was returned to the owner. Between September 8th and September 15th, deputies made 13 arrests in Level 2 and 3 evacuation zones on charges that include criminal trespass, burglary, possession of burglary tools, recklessly endangering, theft, unlawful possession of a firearm, attempt to elude and resist arrest. 35 criminal reports have been taken, police said, and there have been 470 calls that deputies themselves initiated. including 76 subject stops, 72 premise checks, 166 traffic stops, and 156 suspicious vehicle stops. The sheriff's office is investigating and following up on all criminal complaints. Officers continue to encourage people to send reports of criminal activity. Anyone directly witnessing criminal activity in progress should contact the sheriff's office by calling 911 emergencies only and the sheriff's non-emergency line at 503-655-8211. Again, that's 503-655-8211. To report crimes not in progress. Hey, Frankie, you okay? You seem kind of down.
Yeah, I'm just bummed. I miss going to the Wild Hair. I know you can still get takeout and all, but it's just not the same.
You know they're open again, right?
What?
Yeah, they've been open for a while now. Don't you cover, like, the news?
Hey, I'm only human, okay?
Okay. Well, I can tell you that the Wild Hare and their amazing staff are thrilled to be open again for delicious meals and fun times. They are strictly following all the recommended safety guidelines, and they have the only covered outdoor patio in Canby, with lots of tables spaced 6 feet apart and umbrellas also spaced 6 feet apart and fantastic ambiance. And hey, if you're still more comfortable with carryout, they can hook you up there too. Find their menu and other information online at thewildhairsaloon.net or check them out in Canby and Oregon City. Anything to add, Frankie? Frankie? Oh, I guess he left. God, he must have been really hungry. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.